All right, guys. Well, good morning. How are we doing this morning? Good, good. Hey, how great is it to have Esther back on stage? Oh, my goodness. The girl's got a voice, and it's so good to have her back. Well, listen, I'm Paul. I'm one of the pastors here. We're going to spend a little time together this morning. Hope that's all right. We are in week 7 of this series called The Bones Are Good, and we are talking about how we build a life on the really important stuff. And there's this song by Maren Morris out there, maybe you've heard it, called The Bones. And so we're kind of taking some of our ideas, some of our titles from that song. And one of the lines in the song says, when the bones are good, the rest don't matter. And it's actually important to sort through and figure out what really matters, what's really important, and what's maybe not so important, especially right now, right? Because I don't know if anybody else feels completely bombarded by things that are 100% urgent and emergency and everything is important, but I don't know that there's been a time, at least in my life, when it has felt like I have to have an opinion on everything. And so it's really important to sort through what's really a big deal and what's maybe not such a big deal. You know, there's a principle in real estate, and I don't know if we got any realtors in the room, but you'll know this. You know, if you're buying a house, you got to make sure you don't fall in love with the staging. And I don't know if you're not familiar with what staging is. Realtors, they'll go into a house and they'll put in a nice couch and a real big TV and stuff that makes it look really, really, really good. And the problem is, if you go into a house and you fall in love with it because of that stuff, when you move into it, none of that stuff comes with. You just get the house. You just get the bones, right? And so it's important to know what to look for. It's important to know what really matters in that situation and what doesn't. And I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where maybe you bought something or made a decision or participated in something for the wrong reasons and then it kind of came back to bite you later. Like, has anybody ever bought a car because you were real impressed with the bells and whistles? Anybody done this? And then 2 weeks later, you're like, this engine doesn't work very well. It's not a good thing, right? You're stuck with a car. Or maybe you've been on a date. You ever done this? Like, they look real good, but then you get halfway into the date and you're like, this is not going to work out very well. Or maybe there was that show that everybody was watching and then you try it because you want to be cool and in the know and you're like, I don't really understand. I don't get it, okay? It actually comes into play with, like, sports as well. There are like good reasons to choose a sports team and then not so good reasons to choose a sports team. And children don't always get that. My 10-year-old, he kind of is up enough on understanding sort of what's going on in games that he has like actual opinions about stuff. And then my other kids, they watch a game and they're like, hey, are we rooting for the red team or the blue team? And then my 3-year-old, he actually doesn't care. He wants everyone to win. And so he'll sit on the couch and go, go red, go blue, go red, go blue. And I think he's a millennial because he just wants everybody to... Sorry. That was... Forget I said that. But he just doesn't care. And I can't really blame my kids. I think they learned from their mom. See... No, I'm serious. My wife, when she was a kid, her favorite football team was the Miami Dolphins because her favorite color was teal and she really liked their outfits. So that's how she picked her favorite sports team. So there are things, right, that matter more and there are things that matter less. And right now we're in this place where everything matters, right? You go on Facebook, you watch the news. Everything is a special report. I mean, you go on the news and it's like a bombing in the Middle East and then a forest fire and then a squirrel got stuck in a toaster. And all of it is supposed to be like the most important thing you've ever seen. And you're supposed to have an opinion on like 9,000 new life-changing, world-changing things per day. And it's exhausting, isn't it? It's tiring. Right? Well, the good news for you is that although this may be in our face more than we're used to, this is not a new problem. It's not a new issue trying to sort through what matters and what doesn't and focusing on the things that are more important. See, Paul, the Apostle Paul, and these, we're going to have some verses that we're going to go through today. They're going to be up on the screen so you can look at them there. If you have a Bible and you want to open that up, you can look there. If you're in the app, if you have your notes, go ahead and grab those because we're going to start with a verse in the book of Philippians. And 2,000 years ago, Paul was actually dealing with this exact issue in the churches that he was writing letters to. And one of the things he says at the beginning of the book of Philippians is he has this prayer for the people of Philippi, and he says this. He says, I pray that your love will overflow more and more and that you will keep on growing in knowledge and understanding. For I want you to understand what really matters. And if you're taking notes, I would love it if you would underline just that part. I want you to understand what really matters so that you may live pure and blameless lives until the day of Christ's return. See, he was praying that these people would have what he calls discernment. And in another translation, he says he prays that they would be able to discern what is best, that they would be able to sort through their thoughts and their convictions and their ideas about what matters and what doesn't, and how to navigate relationships, especially when we disagree. Now, I want to make sure I'm clear about this. The things that we're talking about today, they're not the big issues. They're not the things that God has said something definitive about. We're not talking about the Ten Commandments today. We're not talking about theft and murder. Okay, we're talking about things that good people can come to different conclusions about. And we'll get there in a minute, but I want to make sure you understand that. And I want to make sure you understand that there's actually something we have to do first before we can even start talking about this, and so I'm going to embarrass you. And I apologize in advance. Now, you guys that are alone in your car, you get off easy right now because you're watching online, you cheaters. But there are four words we have to say in order for this conversation to even work. And they're four kind of uncomfortable words, especially for some of us who are very proud of our opinions. But the four words are, I might be wrong. Okay? So we're going to practice humility here all together. And I'm about to be so proud of all of you because I'm going to make you say this. Now, I'm not going to come to your house if I see you sitting there angrily staring at me. But I think this is important. Okay? So I'm going to count to three. And we're all going to say it together. It's just four words. It's not going to kill you. All right, so one, two, three. I might be wrong. You guys are I heard someone say, I might be right. You need to try again. We've got to start with humility. We've got to start with the acknowledgement that everything we think might not be perfect. We may not actually have all the facts about every single issue. But as we dive into this, I want you to know that we're talking about a two-chapter section in the book of Romans today. It's Romans 14 and 15, and we're going to spend our time there. I would encourage you sometime this week to go and read both those chapters in their entirety, because we're going to hit the highlights, and I'm going to kind of explain to you what Paul's doing in these chapters. But I would love for you to go back, especially if this is difficult for you. And I got to tell you up front, I'm going to poke at some stuff today. And we're going to go deep pretty quickly, and we're going to go intense pretty quickly, because I want you to understand that although you may be familiar with these passages, if you've been around the church and if you've been around Christianity for a while, you've probably heard these passages talked about, because what Paul is talking about is what we call gray areas here. Things where, like I said before, they're not the big issues, they're not the Ten Commandments issues, they're the kinds of things that good people can disagree with each other about. And the problem that we have is that we completely miss how big of a deal the things were that Paul was talking about. See, when we talk about these passages, normally we use examples like whether or not you should have a tattoo or what kind of clothes you should wear or what music you should listen to or whatever. And although those things matter, I want to just give you perspective of what was actually happening in the church in Rome that caused Paul to write about this. See, you have two distinct cultures that were mashed together in most of these churches when Paul was writing his letters. One was people who had grown up in Judaism. And if you know even a little bit about Judaism, you know that food is a big deal. And actually, for both of these cultures, food was a big deal. And what we think of when we think of like kosher laws and the kinds of things that Orthodox Jews still do is we think they don't eat bacon, they don't eat sausage, and we get a little sad for them. But one of the other issues that was a really big deal is that they completely avoided food that had been sacrificed to an idol. And see, every culture in the world, until Christianity came along, every single culture, every single religion did animal sacrifices. But in every city, the animal sacrifice, they didn't use up all the animal, and so the temple also was the slaughterhouse. The temple was also the grocery store where you went to get your meat, because what they would do is they would take the pig or the goat or the cow or whatever they were sacrificing, and then they would use whatever they needed for the sacrifice, and they would sell the rest back to the people. It was how the temple got their money, and it was how the people got their meat. And so this was just where the average person normally went to get meat in a Roman city. Well, for Jewish people, this was really, really offensive. Because they believed that these idols, Zeus, Hermes, Athena, all of them, the gods and the goddesses, represented demons. And so it is no exaggeration to say that they believed that this meat had participated in a satanic ritual. And I think you should probably ask yourself, how would you feel about eating food that was the leftovers from a satanic ritual? That's where they were. Okay? That's real life, the situation these Jewish people were in. And then there's another group of people. They were the people who had grown up in these cities. They weren't Jewish. They were Gentiles, and they had participated in these rituals. See, in their former lives, they had been there in the temples. And if you don't know the kinds of things that went on in these rituals, you need to go back to last summer. You need to listen to our messages on 1 Corinthians and hear some of what was going on. But there's all kinds of crazy, disgusting stuff that was going on. And their world, their religious world, was extremely dark and twisted. And so imagine these were people who had had these strongholds in their life that it was hopeless, it was dark, it was messy. And they were now Christians who were trying to distance themselves from that. So these were the kind of people who believed that they used to be the kind of people who participated in those satanic rituals. And now they were sitting at a table with food in front of them that reminded them of who they used to be, that they were trying to get away from. This is like sending an alcoholic in recovery into a bar every single day and going, it's going to be fine. You'll be fine. So you have these Jewish people trying to distance themselves for very good reasons from this meat. And you have these Gentile people trying to distance themselves for very good reasons from this meat. And then you have this other group of people that goes, I got the meat at the grocery store. What's the big deal? I don't really understand. And they're all together once a week having a meal. So, we need to understand that these issues that Paul is talking about, it's not about the music you listen to when you're by yourself in the car. These are deeply held convictions that good people were landing on different sides of this issue for good reasons. And here's your warning. I'm going to start poking. Because I think our world right now is in the exact same situation. And I want you to imagine with me a situation that is just like what they were in. Okay? I want you to imagine a Super Bowl party. And at this Super Bowl party, on one side of the room, you have this family. They're a generations-long military family. They're a Marine family. And their son has just in the last 3 weeks given his life overseas for the protection of their flag and their country. And on the other side of this room, there's an African-American family. And just in the last 3 weeks, their son has been shot to death in a police shooting. What's going to happen when the national anthem starts? See, this is the situation that the church in Rome is in. And I think that it is the job of the church right now to be the people who have wrestled hard enough and been uncomfortable long enough and loved well enough to be the ones who have something to say in that room. And here's the reality, and this makes me sad. The reality is that the problem they had, we don't have. Because as passionate as we are about this, we're not even in the room together. They were at least at the table together. And that's why this was a problem for them. So, what do we do? How do we know when we're caught up in the wrong things? Write this down. I want to start with this. This is straight what Paul gives us. He says, I'm caught up in things that don't matter when I first try to live by a list of rules. When I try to live by a list of rules. See, it'd be great if we just had a checklist, right? If following God was just about thinking and believing all of the right things and making sure everybody's politics lined up and everybody voted the same, but that's not how it works. It's complicated. And in Romans 14, 6, Paul says this. He says, those who worship the Lord on a special day, now that was another issue they were dealing with. It was another part of this complexity. He says, those who worship the Lord on a special day do it to honor him, and those who eat any kind of food, so those who are willing to participate, who see it as not a big deal, who eat the meat. He said, those who eat any kind of food do so to honor the Lord, since they give thanks to God before eating. So on one side, we have people who are doing what they're doing because they love God. They're doing what they're doing because of their faith. And he said, those who refuse to eat certain foods. So the other group who's come to the opposite conclusion, they refuse to eat certain foods, also want to please the Lord and give thanks to God. So on both sides, Paul says, we have people who have come to opposite conclusions that, by the way, are highly offensive to the other side. And they have both come to the conclusion they've come to because of their faith. And both of them, in their attempts to honor God and to follow their convictions, are doing opposite things that are deep, passionate beliefs for them. Let me give you an example that's maybe just slightly less charged, although not so much for parents. Do we have any parents in the room? Anybody have to decide what to do with your kids this fall for school? Yeah. How complicated is that right now? So I just want to talk to the parents for just a minute, and if you're not in that category, you get to just watch for a second, okay? So parents, listen. If you decided this fall, and some of you guys are starting this week, or you just started last week, if you decided that the best thing for your kids this fall was to go ahead and send them to school and to get them there as much as you can and to try to make it as normal as possible and to send them back to their teachers, even though there's going to be masks and there's going to be weirdness with recess and all of that stuff, if that's the decision you made after wrestling with it and trying to figure out what was going to be best for your kids, I want to say something to you. Great job. Great job loving your kids. And you parents that are trying to figure out how to do this hybrid thing and you're going to have your kids at home with you sometimes, and they're going to go to school like every other day, and you're going to do partial online, and maybe you've even switched your work schedule around or quit a job because you believe that's what your kids need. Great job. You're doing the right thing for your kids. And some of you guys, you've decided that this is the year to take the plunge and just go ahead and homeschool because it's just going to be too different. It's going to be too weird, and you're afraid your kids aren't going to be able to learn because there's too many distractions if you try to send them to school. And so you're messing up your whole life, and you're going to commit this year to homeschooling them. Great job. Way to fight for your kids. Because here's the deal. If I know one thing about parents, I know that they're going to do anything. They're going to do whatever it takes to give their kids what they need. But some of us, we can't handle this idea that two or three different people might make a different decision and that there's not a one-size-fits-all solution for everybody on every issue. But I want to remind you that there was one group of people that Jesus had a real problem with. And that one group of people, they were the kind of people that thought everybody needs to vote the same and everybody needs to think the same and everybody needs to follow the same rules. And they called themselves the Pharisees because they were looking for God's checklist of rules of what everybody should do. Then the other thing that we see is an indicator that maybe I'm caught up in things that don't matter is when I feel contempt for people who disagree with me. I feel contempt for people who disagree with me. Maybe that's not a super familiar word for you, that word contempt, but contempt, well, it's everywhere. If you don't know what contempt is, watch the news, watch the presidential debates. Turn on Facebook, because all you're going to see is contempt. We don't talk to each other anymore. And I really do honestly think probably this is what the presidential debates are going to be. You're stupid. No, you're stupid. No, you're stupid. No, you're stupid. No, I don't like you and nobody else should either. Yeah, well, I don't like you and nobody else should either. That's where we are. And Paul says this, he says, the one who eats everything must not despise. See, that's a feeling word. Must not despise the one who does not. And the one who abstains must not judge the one who eats everything, for God has accepted him. He's not talking about disagreeing. He's talking about the way that you respond emotionally. So this is going to be really fun. I have a contempt test for you. No, trust me, it's going to be great. Okay, so I'm just going to say some words. Now, they're just words. But I'm going to say some words. They're phrases that you've probably heard maybe once or twice. And I just want you to pay attention to how you feel about the people who say these phrases. Okay? You ready? I'm telling you, it's going to be a blast. Here we go. Defund the police. How about this one? Make America great again. How about, hey, we need to protect our borders? Or how about this one? Black Lives Matter. Or a seemingly similar one, Blue Lives Matter, or All Lives Matter. Now let me really rile you up. Go Raiders. I knew there was something we could all agree on. See, the problem is when you go beyond, I'm not sure I can get on board with that, and you go to, really? You're one of those? It's contempt. And then I'm caught up in things that don't matter when I judge other people's convictions. when I begin to judge other people's convictions. And Paul makes the point really, really clear. He says this, he says, "Who are you to pass judgment on another person's servant? Before his own master he stands or falls, and he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand." But we've gotten to this place where somehow we've decided that other people are here and God is here and we're in between going, "Hey, you didn't hear him right." And somehow we think that other people are supposed to answer to us for what they should think. But we put this in your notes to make sure you didn't forget it. This is one of the core ideas that Paul gives us in this passage. Other people don't answer to me, they answer to God. Other people don't answer to me, they answer to God. Now, let's rewind. Let me make sure you understand. We are not saying you shouldn't have an opinion. We're not saying you shouldn't be passionate about that opinion. And we're not saying you shouldn't talk about it. These things are important. You have the privilege, if you're an American citizen, to be politically involved. And you should. You should care about this stuff. You should be active. You should vote. You should protest. You should do the things that you have the right to do, to be involved, because they do matter. And we're not saying you shouldn't have these conversations with people. If you weren't supposed to have these conversations with people, these chapters would not be in the Bible. Paul would have said, "Hey, quit talking about this stuff. Do church and just talk about Jesus and be nice to each other." Paul gets pretty straightforward about this stuff. But if your politics are making it impossible for you to love other people, your politics are too important to you. Period. So, this has been really fun so far. Let's talk about Paul's advice. What do we do with this? How do we actually focus on the things that do matter? Well, the first thing he says we have to do is if I'm going to focus on the things that really matter, I have to wrestle through my own convictions. I have to start with myself, and I have to wrestle through my own convictions. Guys, listen, if you are outsourcing your opinions and your convictions, you have no right to even enter this conversation. And I know that sounds really harsh, but if your first question is, "What does whoever think?" Sorry. Just be quiet. Paul says we have to wrestle through our own convictions about this stuff. That's where it starts. So here's what he says. He says, "I am convinced, being fully persuaded in the Lord Jesus, that nothing is unclean in itself." Do you notice that he gives us the answer straight out right there? He's like, "Hey guys, by the way, if you really want to know, if you're really going to push me, the truth is none of these things are unclean. No matter where they came from, no matter what kind of meat it is, eat it. It's fine." He tells us. But if anyone regards something as unclean, then for that person, it is unclean. So whatever you believe about these things, keep between yourself and God. Blessed is the one who does not condemn himself by what he approves. But whoever has doubts is condemned if they eat, because their eating is not from faith, and everything that does not come from faith is sin. So here's what Paul says. He says, you may land in this group of people that feels comfortable eating this food. And that's fine. You're allowed to do that. You have freedom to do that. You may land in this group of people that feels like you just can't get over that hump. You can't do it because of your past, because of your story, because of your convictions about it. You just can't go there. You don't feel that freedom. That's fine. Here's the one thing you can't do. You can't sit and go, "Hey, what does everybody else think?" Not an option. So, I want to make sure I interpret this in today's terms and make sure you understand what Paul is saying here, what the Bible is saying to us. Paul is saying it's possible to be a Democrat and be a Christian. He's saying it's possible to be a Republican and be a Christian. He's saying that it's possible to fight for racial justice and be a Christian, or to defend the protection of police and be a Christian. He's saying that it's possible to wear a mask or not wear a mask and be a Christian. That's what Paul is saying. And if you can't get there, listen, you don't have to agree with me. And at the end of this, you may hate me. And you're free to do that. I would ask you to do two things. Number one, stick around. Hear the whole thing. And number two, go read this passage. And ask yourself, knowing what you know now about the actual situation, ask yourself if you can keep your stances, not about the issues, but about how to handle other people who believe differently than you. So, what happens? What happens at that party? Now, let me make sure I'm clear about this. These people, they all know each other. They're at a Super Bowl party together. They're friends. They go to church together. They know each other's stories. And so no one is surprised by what happens, because they've talked about it. They're in conversation about this. And that is important. But they're at the party. And all the chips and guac is out, and there's popcorn, and everything's all nice. And then it gets real awkward, because those first notes of the national anthem begin. And that military family stands to their feet. They put their hands over their heart, and they begin to sing. And that African-American family, they get out of their chairs, and they get down on a knee. And there they are in the same room. And I think if you understand this passage, I don't think you have any choice but to say that's how it should be. Because I don't think you have any other choice but to say that because of their faith, because of their convictions that they have come to through wrestling through these things with God, and doing the best that they possibly can to be fair and right in their interpretation of the scriptures, that military family is standing and that African American family is kneeling, and both of them are doing it in faith. Can you handle that? If you can't, I'm not asking you to agree with me. I'm not saying that that's where you have to be. But I am saying you need to do some wrestling with this passage. So you've got to come to your own conclusions. You've got to wrestle with this stuff for yourself. And it's a whole lot easier to just ask what your party or your friends or your news channel thinks. But you don't have that option, not as a Christian. Then the second thing I need to do, because here's the thing, when you do that, you're going to be passionate. When you do that, you're going to believe what you believe, and you're going to believe it strongly. And then you have to decide, what are you going to do with the people who disagree with you? And that's where Paul goes. He says, the next thing I need to do is I need to love the people I disagree with. I need to love the people I disagree with. And he's going to give us, in one sentence, the most important thing he's going to say in this entire passage. This is what it all boils down to. He says this in Romans 14, 20. He says, do not destroy the work of God for the sake of food. Now, it's complicated. It's complicated, guys. Relationships are complicated. People who think for themselves, it's complicated. And in this situation, you probably don't know this. This was complicated for Paul himself. All of the evidence of the book of Acts suggests to us that at this point when he's writing this, Paul is still a practicing Jew who is very uncomfortable with eating this food. Now, he probably does it But he's still practicing the Sabbath, and on his own, in his own home, he's probably still following the Jewish food laws. And in one situation, when he's with a young man named Timothy, and he's mentoring him and training him and teaching him how to be a pastor, he decides that because Timothy is half Jewish and he's kind of trying to figure out his own heritage, he decides that it's going to be okay in this case for Timothy to get circumcised, even though that's not a requirement anymore. And then in another situation with another young man named Titus, who's also a pastor, almost exactly the same situation, Titus starts getting pressure to get circumcised, and Paul goes, no, we're not doing it. So even Paul himself makes two different decisions with two different people. And he gives it to us as clear as he can make it. Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of food. Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of your vote. Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of your political issue. Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of your conviction about what we should do about COVID and whether or not we should reopen and what we should think about masks. I'll say it again. If your politics are making it impossible for you to love people, and by people, I don't mean your friends who agree with you. If your politics are making it impossible for you to love people, then your politics are too important to you. Now there's a couple of problems. I'm going to help you with those problems here. Okay, we're going to go through a little exercise. See, it's hard to love someone I disagree with if I don't know anyone I disagree with. So write that down. I can't do this if I don't know anyone I disagree with. So I want you to write down a name of someone that you know, not just some friend of a friend of a friend who you found on Facebook somewhere because you wanted to have one of those crazy people so you could know what the other side thinks, but someone you actually know that you disagree with on something important. And if you're sitting there going, oh gosh, where am I going to find somebody I disagree with? You have a problem. I'm serious. It is possible these days to curate your life in such a way that everybody who posts something from that news channel, you just go, sorry, blocked. You're done. So who in your life do you disagree with? And I'll take it a step further. If you don't love someone that you disagree with, you have a problem. And then the second thing, the second half of the exercise, the fact is I can't love without listening. I can't love without listening. And so I want you to think. I want you to think about why they think the way they do. Why have they come to the conclusions they've come to that are different from yours? And now listen. Please don't write because they are stupid. Even if you think it. And if you think it, you need to rewind back to point one. Read your notes again. Listen, you have all your reasons. You have your story. You have your culture. You have your convictions. You have all your reasons. But some of us actually think that anybody who doesn't agree with me just doesn't have a brain. So, there's your homework. Love them by asking them. And here's the deal, guys. Some of us actually think that we're like going to be contaminated. And in order to love someone, I have to agree with them, and all of a sudden I'm going to be in their camp. Well, listen, it is important to recognize that love and disagreement can be in the same room together. And there is such a thing as respectful, compassionate disagreement. See, one of the most powerful moments of my entire life, I will never forget it till the day that I die. I was teaching high school. One of the classes I taught was this worldviews class where we looked into kind of different religions, different belief systems, does God really exist, all of that stuff. And one of the parts of the class was this project where the students would go and they would pick another religion. And they would actually go and interview someone from that religion. And so one year I had this group of guys, and like high school guys tend to be, especially when they're athletes, they were a little bit hard-headed, a little bit arrogant, and a little bit trying to prove themselves and how tough they were. And this was still close enough to 9/11 that, you know, everybody wanted to poke at the Muslims. And so these guys intentionally chose Islam for their project because they wanted to make sure everybody knew how big and bad and tough they were, and they weren't intimidated to go talk to some of those Muslims. Well, here's the problem. The problem was that the Muslims that they ran into, they were these young, great, kind-hearted young men. And see, this messed with these high schoolers because they actually liked the Muslims that they met. And over the course of a couple hours, they had this incredible conversation. And by the end of it, they realized, we have some friends. Uh-oh. I'll never forget the day they did their presentation. They actually didn't do a very good presentation because they just told this story. They didn't tell us much about what Muslims actually believe. But it was really obvious by the end of the presentation that these guys now loved someone who believed differently from them. And one of the reasons I love teaching high school is high schoolers are asked any question. And so after they were done, this girl raises her hand and says, hey, you think those two guys are going to hell? I will never forget watching those hard-headed, trying to prove themselves, arrogant high school football players get tears in their eyes in front of their whole class. And the one who was the ringleader of the whole group looked at that girl and said, yes. Yes, I do. I do think that if they don't meet Jesus, that's what'll happen. I think that's one of the most important moments of my entire time teaching. Because that whole class found out that loving someone doesn't mean that truth doesn't matter anymore. And it is actually possible to deeply love someone and to still hold on to the fact that the truth is important. To love and to disagree. So we figure out what we think. We love the people who think differently. And Paul says we got to celebrate harmony, not uniformity. We got to celebrate harmony, not uniformity. See, if you look around the room right now, you'll see that we all look different. We all are different. We come from different backgrounds, different cultures, different families. And I don't know if you know this, but that's not because of sin. If the world was perfect, we'd still be different. And Paul says in Romans 15, he says, may God who gives this patience and encouragement help you live in complete harmony with each other. Circle that word, harmony. See, harmony is not when the band is all singing the same notes. It's when we have drums and we have a guitar and we have a piano and we have vocals and they're all blending together into this one beautiful thing. And it's because of their differences that they are beautiful. And he says, this is what is fitting. This is what is appropriate for followers of Christ, is to live and celebrate harmony. Then all of you can join together with one voice, giving praise and glory to God, the Father of our Lord, Jesus Christ. Jason talked about this a little bit last week, about how we're not all the same, right? We need to be ourselves. And Rick, back when we did this Love No Matter What series, and if you haven't listened to that or you haven't listened to it recently, you need to go back to the beginning of the year and listen to those messages, because they're crucial. And in the message on racism that he did, and this was before George Floyd and this sort of recent round of things all blew up, Rick gave us this beautiful picture of heaven. It's a picture straight from the Bible. And in heaven, when we're there worshiping at the feet of Jesus, we take our ethnic identities with us. And that picture that the Bible gives us of heaven, it's not singing in English or in Greek or Hebrew or any other language. It's hundreds of languages all together in one voice. That's what heaven's going to be. And that's actually important, because if you think heaven's going to be everybody singing like you, looking like you in your style of music, that tells you a lot about yourself. See, one of the most important moments of my life, one of the glimpses of heaven that I've had, is being in rooms where I had no clue what anyone was saying. In Mexico, in Greece, where I'm just trying to keep up, humming along, trying to pronounce words I've never heard before because they're up on a screen and I'm trying to read them. And I was the outsider. And you need those experiences. And you are missing a little piece of the heart of God in your life if you have never been in that situation. And listen, you don't have to go overseas for that. There's a Korean church like 2 miles away. There's Russian and Spanish churches all over this city. Try it sometime. See what it's like. See, when you're in those situations, you realize sometimes what's important and what's not. And thinking about heaven that way helps us to remember what's important and what's not. And Jesus, he was brilliant at helping us see what's important and what's not. There was a scene in the book of John that we see Jesus. He's there with this crowd of people that's trying to trick him into saying something that'll get him in trouble again, because that's what they did. And they bring this woman to him. She's been caught in the act of adultery. She's probably naked, and everyone is fired up about what is he going to do? What is he going to do? What is he going to do? What does he think? How is he going to enforce the law in this situation? And they're just churning and spinning and yelling and spitting on each other, and just everything is chaos. You know what Jesus does? Turns into a 4-year-old, picks up a stick and starts drawing in the dirt and ignores the whole thing. Until they realize that they have made their opinions about the rules more important than a woman's life. You know what I think Jesus is doing right now? I think he's drawn in the dirt. And he's going, hey, whenever you guys are ready to talk again, I'll be here. Have you let him slow you down enough to even ask the question whether or not this should be the crusade of your life? And then finally, Paul ends the passage by saying, if we're going to focus on things that actually matter, I have to always hold on to hope. Have to always hold on to hope. You know the one thing that is completely absent right now from politics and from Facebook and from the news? I'm talking about like not a hint, gone. Hope. You notice that? Because fear and hope, they don't play nice. And hope doesn't really sell. But Paul says, and I love that this is where this verse is. See, if you know me or if you've been to the 8-hour Old Testament, you know this is one of my favorite verses in the entire New Testament. And I love that this is where this is. I love that Paul puts this verse in the middle of this chaotic, passionate debate environment. He says this. He says, everything that was written in the past. So he's talking about the entire Old Testament. For us, we can talk about it as the entire Bible. Everything that's written, start to finish, Genesis to Revelation, all of it was written to teach us so that through the endurance taught in the scriptures and the encouragement they provide, we might have hope. That is the point of the entire Bible. And so if you have lost hope right now, if you're looking around at COVID and you're looking around at schools and you're looking around at government and you're looking forward at this election and you're looking at the issues that are pressing and you're looking at our cities burning and there is no hope in your heart, it can only be because you have forgotten that even though all of that is true, we still worship the God who conquered death. That hasn't changed. And the thing I love about the Bible is that it records generation after generation after generation after generation after generation of chaos and failure. And God over all of it going, I'm still working and I'm not done yet. God's not overwhelmed. And he certainly is not dependent on who wins the election. Amen. Martin Luther King Jr. He didn't get to see his dream. And before I read this quote, I want to make sure you understand that this was not written from some distant place where he got to say, yeah, everything is fine now. Because during his life, he was in the middle of the fight over and over and over and over again. And he was going to prison and he was getting beat up. And he was having assassination attempt after assassination attempt after assassination attempt. And eventually it worked. But this is what he said. He said, when our days become dreary with low hovering clouds of despair, when our nights become darker than 1,000 midnights, let us remember that there is a creative force in this universe working to pull down the gigantic mountains of evil, a power that is able to make a way out of no way and transform dark yesterdays into bright tomorrows. And let us realize that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. And I got to be honest, I wish we could be done right there. But I told you that we were going to talk about what really happens when we take this passage seriously. And so I think we got to go back to our Super Bowl party. And I'm going to say what I think, based on this passage, needs to happen in that room. And you may not be comfortable with this, and that's fine. You don't have to agree with me. But I would ask you to consider, based on what the Bible has taught us today, if that room is full of Christians, what would it look like? And here's what I think. Here's my best guess about what should happen in that room. I think that as that national anthem starts, that military family, they stand. That African-American family, they kneel. And then that military family, they walk across that room and join hands, still standing, with that African-American family. And they do the exact opposite things. By faith, because they love God, and they do it together. That is what I think really matters. And that is what I think it looks like to say that the love of God is bigger than our politics. So maybe you got some stuff to chew on and wrestle with. That's what I think. And that's where I think we have to end up if we take this passage seriously. So before we go, I got to give you a chance to jump into that hope that Martin Luther King had. So don't go anywhere. I just want to ask you, if you're in the room with us, would you bow your heads and close your eyes for just a minute? And if you're online, would you lean in for just a minute? Because the truth is, in order to have that kind of hope, all it takes is saying the same thing that Martin Luther King said and coming to Jesus and saying, God, I know that I'm a sinner. And you can pray this right now, silently in your mind or something like this. God, I know that I'm a sinner. I've done things wrong. I've made mistakes, but I believe that Jesus Christ died for me. And I am trusting right now in Him alone to save me so that in 10,000 years, I will still be with you in heaven. And if you did that or you prayed something like that today, I'm not going to embarrass you or ask you to stand up or come forward, but I would just love to know who you are so that I can be praying for you. And so if that was you, I'm going to have you raise your hand here in just a second. If that made sense to you today, and for the first time you're placing your faith in Jesus for the forgiveness of your sins and the hope of heaven, would you just slip your hand up and put it right back down? Thank you. Just slip it up, put it right back down. And if you're online or watching this later on and that was you and that made sense and you're placing your faith in Jesus, would you let us know that by texting the word believe to the number 313131, and we'll get back to you. We'll help you get started. And Jesus, we have so much complication in our lives right now and so many things to think about and to chew on. And we just need your guidance. And more than anything else, we need hope. We need the reminder that no matter what else in the world lets us down, you never will. And so help us to leave today with a challenge and with more clarity about how we can love one another better. Give us the courage to do it. In Jesus' name, amen. Now listen, stay where you are. We're going to sing a song that is going to remind us of the fact that we still serve that same God who conquered death. And then when we're done, we're going to exit out this way. And if you want to stop by the tent, there's a tent over there that Jacob's going to be there. And he's going to be just collecting some information about our sports ministry that we're starting up. So we would love to just get some thoughts from you on what that's going to look like. And there's also a class coming up. We talked about wrestling through our convictions about this. There's a class coming up at the end of October that Pastor Mark is doing called Politics and Government from God's Point of View. So keep an eye out for that so you can wrestle through this together. And then if you want to give, you can do so in the offering boxes, or you can always give online. But why don't we stand together as we sing this last song?